Welcome back to the Environmental Law Monitor. I'm your host today, Taylor Stewart. This podcast is brought to you by Bracewell LLP's Environment, Lands, and Resources Practice Group, and we often say it's a place for thoughtful conversations. Our conversations range from the latest developments to perennial topics like litigation, enforcement, and compliance assurance. We're glad you're spending some time with us today. And today I am here to discuss a topic that isn't environmental specific, but it is one that is near and dear to my heart that I get questions about a lot. Today we're discussing clerkships, what a clerkship is like, how they benefit you as a lawyer, and whether to clerk. We thought this topic would be great for our Environmental Law Monitor listeners because the most common question I get as an environmental lawyer from law students and particularly junior lawyers is, you know, why did you clerk if you were interested in becoming an environmental lawyer and practicing regulatory law? So I thought it would be really fun to ask two other attorneys at Bracewell who have clerked to discuss these topics and help law students or attorneys reach an answer on this critical question. To clerk or not to clerk. So today I'm joined by Jeff Oldham and Anouk Nuet. So Jeff is a partner in our Houston and Austin offices. Jeff is an experienced appellate attorney. He has presented oral argument in the Supreme Court, in the Texas Supreme Court, and other appellate courts across the country. Jeff clerked for Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, and then went on to serve as a law clerk for Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist of the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're also joined by Anouk Nuet, who's a second-year associate in Bracewell's Washington, D.C. office. Anouk interned for EPA and Valero while she was in law school, and then went on to complete a two-year clerkship for the Honorable Carolyn Michalczyk of the Middle District of Pennsylvania. Anouk joined the firm last October, and she's now an associate in our environmental group. So Jeff and Anouk, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll just kick it off talking about the daily life of a clerk. Between all of us, we've clerked in each level of the federal court system. So Anouk for a federal magistrate, me for a federal district judge. I clerked in the Southern District of Texas in the McAllen Division for a year after law school. And then Jeff at the Court of Appeals and the U.S. Supreme Court. So, I mean, maybe starting from the top with Jeff, can you tell us what your clerkships were like? What did a typical day look like in the Fourth Circuit?
So in the Court of Appeals, I guess in terms of a typical day, what it felt like is working in a small office environment because chambers tend to be a judge and then a couple of clerks. And so your coworkers, so to speak, it's a real intimate environment and you're working very closely with your judge. You're working very closely with your co-clerks. So that's sort of the feel of a typical day. In terms of the workload, it's research and writing is the biggest part of it. In the Court of Appeals, we had oral arguments. And so you had half your cases were getting ready for oral arguments, cases that you're reading the briefs and researching the issues and writing a memo for your judge, or for some judges who aren't memo heavy, you're, you know, talking with your judge about the case. And then the other, you know, say half your cases is once the court has oral argument and they've decided how to rule and assign the opinion, then you're working with your judge to help on that opinion, whether it means for some judges, they write a first draft of their opinion. I think probably more judges have their clerks write a first draft. And so you're working with your judge, helping your judge get an opinion. So that's sort of what you do on a typical day. I think it's a lot of writing, a lot of research, working with your colleagues on how to, you know, get the issues right.
Great. How many co-clerks did you have in chambers when you were in the Fourth Circuit?
So I had two co-clerks. My Judge Wilkinson always, when I was there anyway, I had three clerks every year and two assistants, but he's since switched to, I think, what a lot of other judges have, where he has four law clerks and one assistant.
Did you get to sit in, I imagine, on a lot of oral arguments and kind of get to witness your memos being used when the judge was on the bench?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, different judges have different practices in terms of which clerks come to oral argument. For Judge Wilkinson, his chambers are in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the Fourth Circuit sits to hear cases mostly in Richmond, Virginia. So we were able to all go to Richmond, though, and watch as many oral arguments as we wanted and talk to the judge before and afterwards and get a real firsthand experience and kind of what the judge is thinking. So it's very helpful.
That is really great. And How did that change? I imagine it changed in many ways, but how did it change when you went to the Supreme Court? And maybe tell us a little bit about kind of how you found yourself at the Supreme Court.
Well, it's sort of like winning a lottery, right? I mean, it was a privilege to get the opportunity to do it. The main difference between the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals is you not only have the cases that get argued and decided, what they call the merits cases there, you have the cert process. There are thousands upon thousands of people file writs of certiorari in the U.S. Supreme Court seeking review, and the court gets to decide which cases it takes. And so as a law clerk, in addition to like the merits cases they've decided to take, where you're getting ready for oral argument, or getting your justice ready for oral argument, you also just go through so many cert petitions, and that's roughly half your job there. And most of the justices, when I was clerking there, participated in what they call a cert pool, where they take all the many thousands and thousands of petitions and divide them up by chambers, then divide those up among the clerks in the chambers. And so you're early on, that's all you're really doing over the summer, is you are learning how to efficiently handle cert petitions. And it's daunting at first to write a memo that goes to 9 justices, or at least 8 when I was there, plus the 35 other law clerks who are all brilliant. And so I think initially just learning that was a lot of work. And then you have to learn how to do it efficiently, because that pace keeps going of cert petitions. And then on top of that, as you get into the fall, you start getting argued cases. And so that's the biggest difference, I think, of clerking at the Supreme Court from a workload perspective, is you have the cert pool process. The other difference was just the environment. I clerked for Judge Wilkinson in Charlottesville, Virginia, where he's the only Fourth Circuit judge in Charlottesville. Judge Wilkinson and our co-clerks, we were together quite a bit, but there wasn't other chambers just down the hall that you could go walk and talk to folks unless you're in Richmond. Whereas in the U.S. Supreme Court, everyone's all together. And so I think that is a very different experience, which if you're clerking on the D.C. Circuit and some other places, you can get that experience too.
Yeah, that is just amazing. And I mean, I think, as you just pointed out, it's a different experience depending on the size of your chambers and of course, the level of your court. I was definitely in a smaller chambers in a more isolated part of the country. Anouk, how did you find it in the middle of District of Pennsylvania? What was a typical day like? What were you tasked with? And maybe how many co-clerks did you have with you?
So I also came from a small chambers. It was just the judge, her assistant, and me and one other clerk. So she has 2. And her process is that she rotates off. So you're a clerk for 2 years. And every year a new clerk comes in, the old one cycles out. She actually just got confirmed to be Article 3 judge. So her process is very different now than the one I was a part of. But very similar, I think, day to day is research and writing, or preparing your judge for maybe upcoming arguments or trial, or magistrate judges have a lot of discovery. So there's all the case management that we were involved in. And then a really interesting part of Judge Mihalchik's chambers is that she was the only magistrate on the Judicial Conference Codes of Conduct Committee. And so that was part of my other responsibilities, I guess, is that they would rotate which judge would respond to different judges across the country asking ethical questions. And nothing was binding, but it would allow judges to have the opportunity to ask if accepting a certain speaking request or a gift, or maybe their wife gets hired in a position and it could question whether or not it would be unethical. So that was really interesting, because we got to see a lot of different things that were going on across the country.
That is a really interesting component of it. I think it is interesting how judges do have different responsibilities depending on, you know, where they're located in the country or what positions they serve across the federal judiciary. I know my judge served on certain committees, and she has had a role in sentencing for many years. So that's something that we assisted on her sometimes. But primarily her main focus on her docket was immigration, because we were in the McAllen Division of the Southern District of Texas. So the criminal federal immigration docket there is one of the heaviest in the country. I think it's maybe the second heaviest compared to a district court in Arizona. So being right on the border, she has a big specialty in immigration practice, but she takes the federal criminal cases herself primarily and handles them herself. And then she splits her civil docket across 2 clerks that serve in her chambers. And then similar to your structure, Anouk, and to Jeff's in the Fourth Circuit, she has a legal assistant that kind of helps usher that process along. But because the criminal immigration docket was so heavy, she did ask her clerks to take on a lot of responsibility with the civil docket. And we were definitely drafting first drafts of all of the opinions, and she was reviewing them very closely and working with us on that. But I think it was a great experience because we kind of got to take first pin on everything. And we were very much in charge of the cadence of the cases when we were having conferences. Anything that was coming up, it was kind of our responsibility to know about it and to keep the judge apprised of it. And that level of responsibility, I mean, when you're right out of law school, I think that's something I didn't necessarily have an appreciation for when I signed up to clerk. I knew it would be a lot of research and writing, but I didn't really know how much ownership would be asked of me to really step up and manage an entire caseload. So that part was really exciting, but definitely something that struck me as maybe different from other courts just by the fact that it was located on the border. So yeah, all of that is really great to hear. And maybe that brings us to the question of, you know, whether to clerk and what are the benefits of clerking? Because I think law students specifically are inundated with information about why they should clerk and how they should go about the process. Maybe to Jeff first, having so much experience now as a practitioner, you know, how do you feel your clerkships have benefited your appellate practice?
Yeah, there are ways that clerking has helped my career overall, but just in terms of how it's helped specifically my appellate practice, I think a couple things come to mind. One is writing. It made me a much better writer. The year you spend clerking, especially in an appellate court, you both get to see so many briefs. I mean, your job is to read a ton of briefs. And so you see what works, you see what doesn't work. You start to get your own preferences for what kinds of writing or what kinds of style you might, you know, have on your own when you're sort of writing briefs. And so I think just getting to see so much is going to make you a better writer. And then in addition to that, getting to work with your judges I work for, very gifted writers. And so I learned a lot about writing just by having them edit my work and seeing that process. I think researching when you're clerking, you're busy, you're working on a lot of different kinds of cases. And so you just get very adept at being a generalist and just jumping into a matter you've never heard of when that issue comes up in a brief and researching it and having to figure it out. And so I think it definitely has improved that. I think also other than clerking, there's no way to really see the inside of sort of how judges think. And I think that has helped my appellate practice significantly, just to have seen how judges react to certain arguments or certain styles and have that window into what judges might be thinking. And that really does help in practice, because as lawyers, we often have to think about that question and anticipate and then make our arguments most persuasively to judges. And then the last thing I would say is just that the knowledge you gain in the course of doing that, besides improving your research and writing, you learn about practice. You know, if you're a court of appeals clerk, you're going to learn about the appellate practice of law procedurally. And then you're also going to get exposure to a lot of different subject matter areas. And so I think that too, just come after your clerkship, you're so much more skilled in all those different areas.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I feel very similarly about mine. And what you said about understanding the inner workings maybe of the judge's thought process, how they're going to respond to certain arguments, and seeing briefs, you know, reading pleadings, and kind of learning what not to do. Seeing that, seeing those lessons learned by attorneys in live time, I think is really beneficial to a young attorney. Anouk, one of the things I wanted us to talk about a little bit was how it benefits our environmental practice. How do you feel like your clerkships have benefited you now, having joined the firm and kind of beginning your career? What do you think the benefits are for you now?
So unfortunately, there was not a lot of environmental law in the Middle District of Pennsylvania. But I think going to your point, Jeff, two things that you said brought up thoughts that I think are really important. I learned how to jump in the middle of a case and figure out what I needed to know and what I needed to learn to understand the law of what was being argued, and ultimately try and get to, you know, the crux of what the dispute is. So that's something that's been really helpful, is moving through the arguments and understanding what really is the dispute here, what truly is the facts that are being disputed. So that's been really helpful. And then I think it's always important to learn how to research and learn how to research well and find the cases that you can distinguish to be more helpful towards your client or to understand what the opposing parties are going to argue. I think it's interesting because when I was a clerk, to your point, when you were discussing kind of seeing pleadings going back and forth, is that personally, I truly became so partial, I guess I would say, towards pleadings that were really backed by case law and proving that your arguments, whether you distinguish something incredibly, that you are proving that your arguments are based in something, and that the pleadings that were just more theoretical or hypothetical just never had the strength of the argument. Even if the party didn't even explain the case correctly or fully, it always was stronger when that case law was there or that statute was there. So that's something that I definitely am carrying through into my own practice.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Anouk. It reminds you just how important it is to make sure you're relying on authorities and make sure you're citing the rules when you ask things of judges. That was something that always really irked my judge. And she said it publicly that she really wants attorneys to, you know, follow the rules in her jurisdiction, to make sure that they pay close attention to her local rules and to make sure that they're coming and really bringing substantive arguments to her that she can really consider. And yeah, understanding how a judge is going to respond to something like that, I've always thought is really beneficial. And learning how to adopt someone else's voice. I think that coming into a law firm after a clerkship, that was a really useful skill. Entering chambers, talking to them about what we're trying to accomplish with a certain opinion, you know, what their thought process is behind something, how they would decide the case, that really is instructive in how you write on their behalf. And now, as an associate at a law firm, we work for partners all the time whose voices we're trying to adopt. And we want to deliver something to them that they can look at and say, okay, yeah, this is how I would have written it. You're good to go. You send it out to the client or file it, whatever it might be. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why the clerkship is very instructive to our practice now. I litigate a little bit now, but I do mostly regulatory work. But even my regulatory work, I think that the tools that I got as a clerk really benefit me. I think that's one of the biggest ones. So just learning how to adopt someone else's voice and being able to put that on paper and give them a product that looks like something that they would write, I think is something that's helpful to me now and that I still try to channel when I can. Any cons of clerking? The only one I can think of having clerked on the border during the pandemic is that you can find yourself in some different places that you don't necessarily live when you're in law school. So I moved from DC down to McAllen and I lived there for a year and for 6 months in isolation, which was a really interesting experience. And I loved it there, but I would say that was one of the drawbacks is I did have to pack up and move. I had to, you know, leave my friends and the life that I had in DC. So that was one of the harder parts. It was an easy decision, of course, because clerking is a really beneficial and really prestigious thing to do. Is there anything else that you guys can think of that you just think this is something for people to keep in mind when they're deciding whether clerkships are right for them?
Well, I don't think there's any cons to clerking that make it worth not clerking. I'm a huge fan of people doing it, no matter what kind of practice you're going to go into. I knew people, some people in law school I'd had conversations with, and they would argue that you aren't going to, in the end, make as much money. And that's probably true. But I just don't think I think that is not the right long-term perspective to have, because you can't replace sort of the benefits you get of not, you get a judge who's a lifelong mentor. You get incredible lifelong, hopefully, relationships with your co-clerks, both the clerks that you're working with on a day-to-day basis, but also the broader network of former clerks that you become part of that family. And so, and then as Taylor, you mentioned, you know, it's prestigious. And so it's something that maybe the bonus that you get for clerkship doesn't compensate for the year, you know, differential in salary, but you always have that credential on your resume, which will, I think, help in the future, depending if you're looking for a job or if you are wanting to stand out to a client or to a partner at a firm. It's something that people value and people measure. And I know in our firms, if we have a case that is in front of a particular judge and we're trying to think about how that judge might be thinking about a case, if we have somebody who clerked for that judge or clerked in that court, that's an invaluable thing that firms value. So those are more positives, because I don't really think there's any cons that outweigh it. I do think, of course, you have to be, I'm sure it's true that not every single clerkship experience is a great clerkship experience. There's certain judges maybe who have different work styles or peculiarities that you want to know about. And so I think do your research and make sure that it's going to be a good fit. But I think that's the only other caution that I could give.
Yeah, I would say not necessarily a drawback, just something to think about is, you know, you have to be flexible. You're walking into a judge's chambers. They are the king or queen of their court. You can't impose something. They tell you the voice they want, and you kind of have to follow along with what they say is the decision. So you have to be flexible in that way and be open to, you know, having the criticism in that sense. And then another thing that, again, is not a con, just another thing to be aware of, is you don't get credit, right? Your name is not on the paper. No one knows you really exist. Mm-hmm. So it's something that if you are thinking of this being a long-term, you know, career, it's not a career where you get recognition. So, you know, not negative, just something that if you want that for yourself, might not be the perfect long-term goal, but short-term, I thought it was fabulous. I thought it was a great way to be almost a postdoc experience for lawyers.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is all really good advice. And yeah, I honestly had an almost impossible time coming up with really any negatives. So the answer is you should clerk. But I think that the last few things that you guys said pointed out some things that people should really think about. People have different priorities coming out of law school. They have different interests as junior attorneys, or at any point in your career, people clerk at different points in their career, not necessarily when they're junior attorneys, but any point in your career, there are different priorities in your personal life and your professional life. And there are things that are specific to clerkships that you should think about. And all of those were really good points. The last thing I want to touch on is the application process, which anyone listening to this is probably like, yeah, well, if I can apply and send out hundreds of letters, then maybe I will face the question of to clerk or not to clerk, because the process over the years has become pretty onerous. And I think it continues to be that way. Do we have any tips for lawyers that are applying to clerk and that are interested in clerking?
I think that one thing that I didn't realize is that my judge really pays attention to what her clerks say. And so I think if you have, you know, one particular judge you really care about, be purposeful. Don't just pretend to be really interested in a judge for no reason. But if there are a handful that you truly do want to work for, I would recommend looking up their prior clerks and getting in contact with them. My judge still will ask me if I know anyone that I think would be a great candidate for her. And she takes that to heart. I worked with her for 2 years. We have a very good relationship together. So I think something that's important is to realize connections really do matter. And those are personal connections too.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And another source of those connections can also be law professors. If you have a law professor, one that clerked for a judge and is him or herself a former clerk, or is just someone who knows judges because of the nature of their scholarship or the like, I think law professors can also be very helpful, not only in helping you to have a better shot at a clerkship, but also in maybe helping candidates find the right fit.
Yeah, those are great points. And I think now law schools have a lot of resources, not only for law students, but also for alumni or attorneys that are later in their careers. I know my law school still sends out a clerkship bulletin that goes out to alumni, and it notes for people when there are openings or when new judges have been appointed and they're looking for clerks. I think that's a great way to look for where there are openings and then research judges that you're interested in working for, to try to put yourself in the position to get before them or get an interview. I think that's a great way to do it. And it seems like something that schools are really focusing on now, which is great. I think our conclusion here is that clerking is fabulous. Are there any last thoughts that you guys want to share with our listeners just about your clerkship experience?
I think it's important just to be open and to allow it to be what it's going to be. You can't pick what cases are going to be your judge's main docket. My judge had, as you were saying, Taylor, you had a lot of immigration. I had a lot of prisoners and Social Security, which was not particularly exciting, but I did find ways to really enjoy the facts and getting into a series of case law that I didn't even know that I would ever work on. And it was kind of uncomfortable, but it was a great growing experience to work in case law that I never, ever focused on or thought that I would be involved in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And Jeff brought this up earlier, talking about learning how to be a generalist and just jumping into a case that, you know, maybe you've never seen anything like this before. And I definitely remember early days in my year-long clerkship in the first few weeks being given a case that I was like, I have never seen anything like that. I've never seen this statute before. I've never even heard of anything like this before. You know, what am I going to do? You start reading through the pleadings, you're trying to understand all this information. And at that time, it felt really overwhelming. And now I'm confronted with a case or a research question or new issues. And maybe you feel it for a second, but it's nothing like it was when you first looked at that docket for the first time and it had hundreds of filings on it and you're supposed to figure out what was going on. Now I kind of look at it like, okay, I've, you know, seen a lot of things. I've seen a lot of different types of cases. Whatever's coming at me right now, I can handle it. I can get my arms around it. Learning that skill, I think, is really important.
I think the one last thing I would mention is, Taylor, you flagged about, there might be some geographical locations maybe that wouldn't be your number one like sort of vacation destination. But the way I looked at it is that I was fortunate to be geographically flexible. Like I was married, but we didn't have kids. And so my wife was totally good with moving anywhere. And so I looked at it as just an opportunity to go live somewhere new for a year, which for me was Charlottesville, which is beautiful. And so I think you can look at it as an opportunity too, just to live somewhere else for a year and experience new things for a year before, you know, settling into practice or whatever you want to go do after the clerkship.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I actually really ended up enjoying where I ended up living. And now I have an entire network of people at a court and in a different city. And that's, you know, a huge both personal and professional benefit that people should keep in mind.
Yeah. One more thing I thought about was I also was flexible and I've never lived in Pennsylvania in my life. I never even went until the day that I was moving. I just kind of figured there's no need to pop this bubble until it's happening. But something I thought was interesting is if you're flexible, it's great. At the same time, if hypothetically you maybe only want to do corporate law or only want to do bankruptcy, it would be maybe important to focus on a bankruptcy court or something that is narrow in that way, maybe going to Delaware or something along those lines. Because then when you're applying to those jobs and you can show how interested you are in that specific type of law, it will be more conducive for you and the judge to understand that relationship.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Anouk. Finding a court that's maybe if they specialize in your subject matter area, I know for environmental lawyers, you know, it would be hugely beneficial to clerk somewhere like the DC Circuit or even DC District Court, where you get a ton of environmental litigation out of these federal agencies. There are ways, if you're interested in specific areas of the law, to do a clerkship that is a little bit more focused on that. It might be the case that you don't get all of those types of cases, that it won't be specific to that, but that's a good way to get yourself more experience if you're worried about maybe taking a year away from what you were already planning on doing. Well, I think that's all we have for our guest today. Thank you both so much for joining me. And I'll invite anyone on our listeners list to reach out to both of you or reach out to me if they have questions about clerkships. And all of us at the Environmental Law Monitor really appreciate both of you coming on today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.